Welcome to the Zulu One Podcast. Today, our guest is a holistic practitioner, a wellness, organizational, and family constellation facilitator, and my good friend, Sophie Sudai. So.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you been?
I've been really good. Yeah? I've been practicing systemic work.
Okay.
Watching the new series with Al Pacino on...
The Hunters.
I'm already on episode 7.
I watched the first episode.
So I'm a little tired this morning because I was up until 4 o'clock.
Oh, my gosh.
I couldn't stop watching.
That's a good show. I saw the first episode and I was kind of blown away.
But it goes up.
Really?
Even more. And so there's like certain parts of that are reminiscent of my own family.
Okay. Well, I would imagine, right?
So it kind of like it stirs things up. And, you know, some people like can visualize things. They only have to be told.
Okay.
You know, like part of being an empath.
Yeah.
Is that you kind of visualize the situation and then it's hard to get it out of your head.
Ooh.
So there's a couple of the stories that were floating around all day yesterday, and I had to practice that retraining your mind of think of this. So shift your brain, shift your mind, shift your mind, shift your thought, shift your thought. I won't tell you. They say it's fiction.
I know they say it's based on true story. What I heard about it was that it was based on true events.
It's absolutely based on true events because what they said is that when they tried to get the scientists and the doctors not to go to Russia, they brought them here.
Oh yeah. Operation Paperclip is what it was called.
But there is such. Yeah. I heard about this many many years ago, but because in Simon Wiesenthal's found, you know. It's really based on him.
Okay.
And he was the Nazi hunter until he died. Like,
really?
He's got stories.
And well, the guy that I can't remember his. What's his name, John? The scientist, the German scientist that was the head of NASA. Von Braun?
Von Braun.
Von Braun was the head of. He was the head of the space program at NASA, and he was a Nazi.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just that's reality, right? That's history. And he was, it was called Operation Paperclip, where Americans, like the American government, brought in high-ranking Nazi officials or scientists and brought them to the States to run some programs.
Yeah.
Like, that's wild.
Yeah. And then one of the things that he said in... so one of the I forgot his name, Tom Seltzer, right? He was running for president, but he dropped out of the race.
Okay.
A millionaire.
Seltzer? No, Tom Stoyer.
Stoyer.
Yeah,
sorry,
Tom Stoyer.
Tom
yeah,
Stoyer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So his father was one of the prosecutors at Nuremberg.
Really?
He said that he was on.
Oh
a,
my gosh!
He was doing an interview with Katie Couric or one of those.
Okay.
No, it was Amanpour on CNN.
Christine Amanpour.
Christine Amanpour.
I like her.
He was doing a an interview with her on CNN, I think it was, or BBC, or I don't remember. But he mentioned that because I didn't really know him, and I wanted to hear what he had to say about himself. And he was like, why he became a civil servant and why he felt it was really important for him to serve this country. And then he said because his father was very young, and I think it was his first, his father was a lawyer, and it was his first time to litigate.
Okay.
And he was like second chair or third chair in Nuremberg. He was like,
wow.
But in Nuremberg, they only actually found guilty 11 or 12.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Of the...
Of the 8 million.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And then when we were living in Israel, we went back to Israel in 86. That was when the trial of... He was in Chicago.
Okay.
Diman Yuk. They brought him from the U.S. They took him back to Israel. And he was one of the sadistic guards.
Is that the guy that they found?
Living in Chicago.
He was late in his age and they found him. Oh, wow.
Most of them were late in their age and they found them.
Really?
But yeah.
Wow.
So it's like this balance, right, of in a systemic world, right? Like, okay, so your system is affected by this system, but the bigger world system. So you have this world war, and so there's that dance between justice,
yeah,
and the need to save yourself, because in those were the 50s, right? The communist years, there was that frenzy about communism.
Yeah, McCarthyism.
Yeah, so everybody was going to be a commie, so if they didn't come to us, they would go to Russia,
yeah,
right? But then we treated them like celebrities, and one of the lines in the show was, well, if we went to Russia, they said, if we don't go, they'll kill us. But in the United States, you invited us in to have this life of, you know, luxury.
Hmm.
And you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's like, how much? Then you watch the manipulation. And you ask, like, how much we know, right? How much we are really manipulated by the systems that we are in.
I mean, they're self-perpetuating, right? And that's the whole point.
Yes and no, right?
But they're like, self-preserving, I guess.
Right, but there's like it's kind of like the tides in the ocean.
Yeah.
So there's a constant movement, and you're constantly saying yes and no. Yes, I'll dance. No, I won't dance.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the system, the political system, right? So the political system is saying injustice, you know, wealthy, all of this stuff, and then. And then the other side. So you've got Bernie. Say you have Bernie against Trump. Well, that's like two different sides of the system,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Of course, they're both in just in how you look at it. You know, 30,000-foot view is it is the victim and the perpetrator. That's the dynamics that they both represent, right?
Exactly. But Bernie is both the victim and the perpetrator, and Trump is both.
Of course, they always are, yeah.
Right, so there's that dance again.
Yeah.
So when we choose to buy into the propaganda, when we choose not to.
Hmm.
So where are we in our own system? Like, if you take it back just to you.
Yeah, 100%.
You take yourself out of it and you put yourself back just to you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And where am I not in balance with me?
Yeah, and that's the fundamental question for everybody, right? Where am I not in balance with me?
Right.
And I've done that for kind of just almost my social media intake, right? I started saying, I'm going to stop participating in the micro-judgment, I guess, ecosystem, right? Because that's what social media, you know, those algorithms that Facebook has says, I'm going to create, you know, I'm going to just exponentially grow whatever you like or dislike, right? So I was listening to somebody and they were saying that somebody started liking puppies and they would just kind of hack the, I mean, it's not really hacking, but they would just trick the algorithm into thinking that all they liked is puppies, and it just started feeding they started loading their feed with puppies, right? And so if you have a tendency, or like everybody has a tendency, right, to have you know, to clutch their pearls about whatever thing it is, whether it's, you know, kids in war, or if it's social justice, or if it's Trump, or whatever it is, it's going to bring in more of those things to say, hey, participate more and act more, you know, engage more in this self-perpetuating kind of tunnel of, or, you know, spiral of disaster or whatever, of engagement, right? Because that's, at the end of the day, what it is.
So I think from a systemic point of view, it's the dance that we do with ourselves all the time. So if you're like whatever we're watching, so we have, so like the series that I'm watching. So I'm watching it now from, a systemic point more than, you know, maybe 10 years ago I would have been, you know, with my emotions and my feelings, I'm really entangled in it, right? So now I keep going back and forth, and when I hear the stories, which I can't get out of my head, I look at it and I say, okay, so I have the chance to go into that hate again, the one that I was brought up on, you know, terrible. Not condoning the act, but just so this is in my view.
That must be so difficult to do.
And then I have to look at it and say, okay, so from a systemic point of view, I'm reacting in the old way. And then I zoom out and see the big picture, and then go back to looking at it from a, which is not an easy thing. It takes a long time to really understand yourself and what's happening, is to go back and say, in a grateful way, because of this, I'm here. So if that hadn't happened, my parents might not have come to this country, and I wouldn't be here, living here. So how do you come to terms with both of those things?
Do you think that the insidious part of judgment is that it makes you right? That's what I've found, is that it's so righteous, right? And more correct, and I mean not systemic, in a non-systemic way of thinking, more correct than what happened during the Holocaust for the Jewish community, to say that it's such a strong identification with the victim that you're saying, I'm righteous in my hate, right? It's to say, and it just entangles you to such a deep degree into it. Obviously, I'm sitting here from, you know, sunny Fort Lauderdale, very, you know, nice, comfortable, sunny Sunday morning, and I don't have anybody in my lineage that has experienced that type of atrocities, but it's so righteous in the outrage is righteous, right?
So you take that into any system, and you take it into the Native American system, and you take it into the African American system, and there's that wall.
Of course.
Where you can't get beyond that trauma, right?
Of course.
So in the Jewish tribe, it's been eons of persecution.
Yeah.
Okay? So when you go to Native American, it was also eons because indigenous have been persecuted, you know,
and
way
also
back
fighting
when.
Each other. Like that,
but the Jewish tribe also would fight each other. There would be, I mean, like if you go back to the time of the 12 tribes and King David, you know, it was tribal.
Yeah, of course.
And so they would have conflicts.
And there
would be skirmishes, but there wouldn't be full blown wars against each other. But then there was, because you had King Saul, who was trying to kill David before he became king.
Yeah, and the Egyptians enslaved the Jews.
Right.
Like, there's this...
But the Egyptians enslaved a lot of people.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you had the Romans, who enslaved a lot of people,
exactly.
Right?
Then
you had, like, where did it stop?
It's always about the systems and the cycles of the victim and the perpetrator, always. It seems
because
like it's just self always...
Because it's a balance of light and dark.
So what do you think now that we're... Why is it getting resolved is my question. You know, like, why is it now that we're starting... Because throughout history, we've been, you know... They're saying, you know, from what I've heard, is that we're getting better, right? There's less genocide and less, you know, statistically, across the world...
That we know of.
But statistically, you know, now that with the kind of rise in social media, you see a lot of stuff is documented, but from what I understand is that we haven't had a great war since World War II. There's been some conflicts
in Somalia, and what's been going on
the
in
scale
Africa
of it is not even on par.
But we don't know We don't know.
We don't know?
We don't know. I think we think that we have all of this access to social media and all of these things, but we don't, because there's so many parts that are closed off.
I mean, in sheer numbers, there was 100 million Chinese that died during Mao. That's the...
But look, you don't even know how many Chinese have died from this virus.
Yeah, they're but it's in the thousands.
We think.
But if we were in the...
We think.
So if we were in the millions, it would be a... There's like logistical crises that happen with that. Just even disposing of, processing bodies that we would do. Like the systemic... I guess like the scale of violence that we saw at the beginning of the 20th century, thank God we haven't seen, and we're not on that scale yet. And so from many accounts, where the violence has gone from massive scales to not as bad, right?
Right.
It's been the last 50 years, let's say, the last 50 years in human history, when you put the large scale of human history in perspective, have been relatively peaceful. Obviously, that's not... It's been peaceful, but and my question is... Why?
So there's a theory that if you look at in a shamanic way or in a energetic way, right? And you look at the flow of the soul and that the soul reincarnates and comes back, right? So there's a thought of what if you are your own ancestor?
Okay.
And so you're coming in with that cellular knowledge.
Okay.
Of that perpetrator and victim.
Okay.
So you feel it. So sometimes when you hear something on the news or you see something, you have a bodily reaction.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it's reminding you of something, or you feel
like an emotional attachment or entanglement to it.
You feel it in your body.
Hmm. Is that what happens with you with hunters?
I think it's both.
Hmm.
Because I know, like in my belief system, I know that I had a past life there, and I had regression, and I remember things, like I had a memory, and it made sense.
I've always tried to reconcile those two things, right? The past life thing and the... almost like the morphic resonance side.
Right.
Like if there's... The closest thing that I've got towards that is that, there's this data, right, that comes through all people, and that's where consciousness comes from. And that has all the data from my ancestors. But so you believe that somebody is reincarnated based on that information?
So what I believe is that your soul continues, mm-hmm. right? But it's time is not linear, so past, present, and future are happening at the same time in different places. So when you have a trigger that relates to another existence, you feel it in your body. And it's deep when you meet somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Your soul is having different experiences, so sometimes you feel like you drifted, like you lose a few minutes, or you lose 15 minutes, or like where did I go? Is that you shift back and forth, or you have dreams, but they're real? They feel like the lucid dreaming.
Okay.
So I believe that these existences are happening at the same time, but they're not a past life, but that they're another. Existence,
okay.
Another experience.
Almost like a different dimension.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're going back and forth, but from a systemic point, your soul said when it was created at the beginning, these are the experiences that I want to have, and these are the places I want to be. And then you bring free will in there, and so you have the choice in that existence. Always. So if we're taking that cellular memory and we've got the technology now and we have all of these other things that are enhancing the experience, then we can resonate more because we've been through so much, is that we know what we don't want.
Yeah.
So then we're more open to saying, we don't want to do that again.
So in theory, we're getting better, right? It's like we're healing.
We're evolving.
We're evolving, yeah.
We're continuing to grow. I wouldn't say we're getting better. I'd say we're evolving and ascending. So we're coming in different vibrations at a higher level.
Yeah.
And because matter, right? Like Einstein said, we're all matter.
Yeah.
Some are vibrating. So this is matter too. It's just vibrating at a more dense vibration or cycle. So it's harder, but we're softer. And we're an ecosystem unto ourselves. Mm. Our body, our mind is an ecosystem. So, you know the movies Men in Black, right?
Where they have the
body, and then the head opens up, and there's this little ET, right? So this is a vehicle for us. This body is a vehicle, right?
It's
where the soul resides, and in this experience, this is the vehicle.
The Abraham thing really, really blew my mind. And that it always takes me to that place, right? In the teachings of Abraham, it says, and probably for people that don't know, is that, people that are listening, there's people that are going to be listening to this podcast. So from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that Abraham is, there's the physical world and there's the non-physical world that's infinitely intelligent and has no time, space, restrictions, right? And that speaks to that, right? That says there's the physical world and there's a non-physical world, and there's a relationship between the two,
right? So Abraham is an energy. It's a group of consciousness energy that's being channeled through
Esther Hicks.
And it was prior was her husband Jerry Hicks, who passed, and he's on the other side now, but she channels that energy, and the core is that you have a stake in your existence, so you can change your environment. Like, we have free will, so if we decide that we don't like what's happening, we can change it.
Yeah.
But see, most of us don't feel that we have control over our lives or our existence, so we kind of like become. Sorry, we walk on like autopilot. Something happens, we react.
Something happens, we react. Yeah.
Something happens, we react. We react well or we react not well, right? So if you look at that and you say you can change your thought process and your environment, that's what I was talking about in the beginning, is how I look at the hunters now versus how I might have looked at them 20 years ago. Right?
Yeah.
So I have the choice. So in my own environment, every 64 seconds, I can change my experience. So I'll give you a perfect example. And they say
64 seconds?
64 seconds.
Really?
Yeah. So they say you live your life by the way you drive. So if you pay attention to the way you drive.
Oh, man.
It has a direct connection to your life.
Really?
Yeah. So
yikes.
The day
I'm in trouble.
You wake up. And you're happy and everything's fine and you're driving and somebody cuts you off, you smile and you'll let them in. Maybe you'll say, you're such an idiot, but you're going to be laughing,
right? Go pound
right?
sand, yeah.
You'll be like, oh my God, just go.
Yeah,
you just let it go and it doesn't affect the rest of your day.
Yeah.
But you wake up late, you didn't sleep well.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get on the road. And the guy who cuts you off, it's like, you blah, 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 how dare you? And even you might even get into the situation of road rage where you're going to chase them so you can, like, shake your hand and say, what did you do? That's the difference, right? It's like where you were in your consciousness at the time that you had the experience.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So if you mindfully get into the car and say, today I choose to be in alignment.
Yeah, to go and flow.
Right?
Yeah.
Then, so you get upset. Somebody comes in and you go, today and all the days to come, which is how Abraham says it, I choose to be in alignment with myself. And there's a bunch of different intentions, and there's so many YouTubes. So anybody who's listening, it's really good just to experience it because it shows you that you have more... I wouldn't say control because we have no control in my view.
Yeah.
But it actually gives you tools
to
help you be more in alignment on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So if you breathe, and then there's breathing techniques, which are awesome, because when you breathe, you can slow down all of those chemical reactions that are happening in your body. So you have a thought, right? So say you have, and we all get messages, but we just don't understand that we're getting them, right? So we get a message, and then it comes in. Well, then we put it in our filter of our mind, and then there's a judgment attached to it. Is this my thought? Is it not my thought? What do I do with this thought? How do I go with this thought? I don't like this thought. I like this thought. Then it creates a chemical reaction in our body. So either we're going to have like a fright or flight, or we're going to have endorphins, or we're going to have adrenaline and cortisol. But there's a physical chemical reaction in our body.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Well, that affects our brain. Yeah. Then it goes back. The thought comes in, then it goes back into the brain with the affected blood flow.
Yeah, and then not only that, it creates, if that happens often, it creates patterns, and that's learned behavior, right?
And it also creates illnesses in the body, and it also creates chemical, physical ailments or blocks or pains or whatever. So if you get the thought and you stay in that, I don't like this thought, so I'm going to shift and retrain my brain, kind of like taking Pavlov's theory with the dogs, right?
Yeah.
But to a different level and say, I'm going to retrain my brain, so I don't like that thought, I'm going to shift it. I'm going to like that thought, I'm going to shift it. And then what you're doing is you're projecting an electromagnetic field around you. So when you shift the thought, you know, if you're in that rage, you're going to encounter more rage because that's what you're attracting to yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
So people say the law of attraction doesn't work and blah, blah, blah. It's an energetic field that you have to create, and you have to create a momentum and get into the vortex, because it's not just, oh, let me ask. You know, you can go and ask your boss for a raise, and he'll say yes or no, depending on the approach.
Yeah, it's what you give your intent to. Yeah.
So your energetic approach is the same as how you would think about how approaching a person. So if you're getting things into your, and it's not that simple, and I'm oversimplifying it because there are people that are going to say, oh, Abraham, it doesn't work, and it's just too simple, and we don't have that.
But it's true for them. If that's what their position is, it's true for them. Yeah,
exactly.
It's going to be true for them anyways. Yeah.
So why are we teaching mindfulness, and why are we starting to teach children? Because now with technology, they're getting so bombarded that they don't have a downtime in their brain. So they don't know quiet time. Mindfulness is teaching quiet time. You have to quiet your brain.
Yeah.
You have to turn off the devices. And you have to just sit with your brain and mindfulness and peace and quiet and go to a place where there's no thinking. Because if you don't, you never calm yourself to the point where you can actually be just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the religious side, I've always admired the Sabbath, you know, the saying, hey, we're going back to, you know, back to basics. We're going to shut everything down and we're just going to be as a family. And that's, I've always admired that. One of my good friends is very religious, is very Orthodox. And he just, you know, turns into a bunk on Friday night, and then he doesn't resurface until
Saturday night.
Yeah. And he kind of disconnects from everything. He's with his family, and I think it's a great practice.
But there are a lot of different practices that do that. And so one of the people that I really admire who came out with this is Deepak Chopra, because he brought out the understanding that you have to find peace.
Hmm.
Because I think we've got so much going on, and now especially, like, you know, people can have a relationship, meet somebody on a dating site, go out and never meet them and not realize that they haven't met them and break up with them, and it's all on text.
Yeah.
That happens.
It's
not as rare as you think.
Yeah.
It's more, people are becoming more silo, or, you know, just like me and my
it's
little,
more disconnected, right?
So how do you connect?
I mean, I really do believe that in one way or another, social media has amplified our tendencies, right? And our tendencies, if we're not aware of the systemic dynamics, is to cast judgment, right? And you cast judgment, and you're tied to that judgment, the rigidity of that judgment, forever.
Right.
Rather than it being having the opinion, the flexibility of an opinion. So if you're casting micro judgments on everything, and that's what, you know, you hear about these dating apps is like swipe right or swipe left. It's like you're just almost throwing them away or giving them green light to do what they're just these micro judgments that create these rigid structures around us, and it's terrifying. It really terrifies me.
And when you go to a restaurant, what do you see? The kids have a pad or the phone. Yeah. And when you were a kid, when your parents took you out to a restaurant, you sat.
Yeah.
We had...
Or ran around and got on the table and had too many Shirley Temples. Or.
but we had connection. So in my family, and even though my kids are in their late 30s, we have, when we all get together and go to dinner, no phones
at
the table.
Yeah.
No phones. And we talk.
Yeah.
You have to put that in the agenda. You've got to make the time for that, because there's so much coming at our kids and us, is that it's so easy to just sit there and go through your emails or swipe, but you have to designate the time. And the other part is get out into nature, because nature also has a vibration.
Yeah.
And then when you can see the smallest little bug.
Yeah, and you have to be quiet to observe it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I always, as a kid and as an adult, hated ticks. I thought they had no purpose at all, except to bother me and make me take them off my dog or my cat, whatever.
Yeah. But
never saw any purpose to them. Then I started to see ibises and herons in my yard, and then I would see them on cows or in the fields with cows and horses. So ibises eat
ticks. Really?
And they digest them through, and then they bring them out, and so they're cleaning, and then they become like fertilizer.
Oh, wow.
Well, then I also found out just recently that possums eat ticks.
They eat a lot of ticks, yeah.
So it's like, okay, so they are in the food chain.
Yeah, of course.
Why?
Just
I have
like
no
mosquitoes.
Idea.
Mosquitoes are the same way. Yeah.
And there are these birds in the Amazon that eat these seeds and digest them and then poop them out. And that's the way the trees grow, because there's something that the bird has to...
They're all in balance with their position in the ecosystem.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at this bug as not worthy and that animal not worthy, but this one's worthy, and you see, wow.
Yeah.
So like if you look at it, like there's something I tell people who have a very strong belief that there's only one way to heaven.
Mm.
So my answer to that is, if God created 20 million types of flowers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure that there's more than one way to heaven.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because
it's
your perception, my perception, perception, right? And then how do you see it?
One of the things that I've been most kind of the thing that's happening with me a lot is that I grew up Catholic, right? So I went to an all-boys Catholic school, and it was very rigid. It was, if you're not Catholic, and it was Opus Dei, it's like, those are like super Catholics, right? And so it was this, you know.
Opus Dei. Oh, yeah. From the movie.
Yeah, from the movie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That, it was that order of
Catholicism.
It's like mega Catholics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I went to an Opus Dei school, an Opus Dei all-boys school.
Wow.
And so there was very rigid systems of belief, right? And I kind of my mom was very open religiously to like the evangelical American, you know, rock star church, what I call it, you know, like the power band and, you know, listening to music and singing and all that stuff. And so I would have like this experience where the whole week I would go through super religious, you know, traditional ancient religious
right.
structure.
Right.
And then on Sundays we'd have this, like, you know, diet church or light church, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
Church light. And then after getting, I became very, just like kind of a non-believer, right? And it wasn't until I got into family constellations and this type of work and then got deep into it for a very long time that you start seeing the existence of a power that's greater than us, that
right.
takes the form of an ancient, infinite knowledge of everything, right?
Right.
That connects all of us. And it's just and then you put that in context with a you know, scripture or whatever, and then there's these ancient truths that start, you know, kind of bubbling up from it, which seems really interesting. And then you kind of fuzzy away or ignore the you know, kind of the stuff that doesn't make sense, right? But the ancient truths are in there. That ancient knowledge is in there. And you take those teachings and you kind of base everything off of that in pretty good shape, right?
But then as you grow and as your consciousness changes and your magnetic field changes, then different things come into your environment, and then you start to see that there are mystical sides to every religion.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then you have the charismatic Catholics.
Yeah.
You have the Kabbalah.
Yeah.
You have Zen Buddhism.
Yeah.
You have Tibetan Buddhism and Hinduism. And if you look at all of those from a higher perspective, if you zoom out, they all have a thread that is extremely common.
Yeah.
So if you look at Kabbalah from really ancient texts or ancient beliefs, right, you see that it's exactly the same as Buddhism. It's about caring for yourself and your family. It's about being in alignment with nature. It's about your thoughts, and that you have in Kabbalah, it's like there's the 99%, which is the unconscious, and then there's the 1%, which is you. And when you're not connected to the 99%.
That's in Kabbalah? So yeah, 99% is unconscious and 1% is
right.
conscious.
There's the 99% and then you're
wow.
the 1%, right? And so the 1% has a choice all the time to either be reactive or not reactive. So if you're in the reactive, it's the same as we were talking about with Abraham, is that you have the ability to change your environment.
Yeah.
But we never think that we are strong enough, because then if you look at the person's system, are they stuck in the victim or are they stuck in the perpetrator?
Yeah.
Because we're all part victim and perpetrator.
Yeah,
okay?
We're both.
So,
and we also have the potential to be both.
Exactly.
Exponentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a really dear friend of ours, Michelle Bleckner, she experienced a systemic workshop in Holland. And
yeah.
she came back with that. The perpetrator in me gives me the perseverance to continue.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And the victim in me gives me the compassion to understand.
Of course. That was huge. Yeah.
And then the other thing that was huge is that we're both, right?
Yeah.
But then the other one that was huge is problems are opportunities for growth.
Yeah.
Problems don't want to be solved. They want to be understood.
Yeah.
So if we at the thing that's bothering us the most, right, from a systemic point, if we can see it and we can say, okay, what is this triggering in me?
Yeah.
And we look at our life as a mirror and not as I'm a victim and these people are doing this to me.
Yeah.
Okay? But taking responsibility, because that's what the Kabbalah says, that's what Buddhism says,
yeah.
that's what Hinduism says. It's like, I take responsibility for me. My kids are on loan to me. My husband or spouse or whoever, your significant other, they're there to grow. But everything is a mirror. So if I don't like what I'm seeing, the only person I can change is me.
Yeah.
I can only change my reaction to what's happening, which goes in total alignment with what Abraham said and all of the others, is that I can change my outer environment. So
I can change my outer environment.
You can't change the fact that, you know, right now your job isn't giving you enough money to pay all your bills. But you can change the way you react to it.
Mm.
And by changing the way you react to it and zooming out and saying that I can move things, because there's different levels of acceptance, right?
Yeah.
There's different levels of acceptance. So, you know, when you look at the terrible things that are happening, or you look at somebody in your family who's really sick and you say they have control, it's very hard to wrap your head around something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you look at it and see it more like, okay, how can we be supportive? And what is that triggering in me?
Yeah.
So what fear is coming up? Am I afraid of dying? Am I afraid of being sick? Am I afraid of being totally dependent on somebody because I can't receive?
Yeah. Or losing somebody.
Or losing somebody because I'm so attached to them. And where am I giving my power away?
That's one of the things that the reoccurring thing that's come up in my life is once I figure out that something, I'm so emotionally attached to something, it's because I feel that it's a part of my identity. So having that go away is losing a part of who I am. And so I'm putting myself in something else, you know.
Right.
And that's the thing that, you know, when you hear some people about political views or whatever, it's like when things go into the realm of irrational, it's like, okay, all right, so there's something more here. So denying that is denying yourself, because that says something about who you are as a person.
But not only that, it's like, okay, we don't like some of the things that are happening in the political system, but we are no longer at the point where we can sit on the fence and say somebody else's vote is going to change
it. Of course.
Somebody else's action is going to change it. Somebody else's view is going to change it, right? So the alarm. So we have to say, I need to take responsibility for what I say, what I think,
and the co-creation of it,
and the co-creation,
and the co-creation of the system,
which is exactly what Abraham says.
And the co-creation of the system. That's when. So for those that don't know, we did a workshop on organizational constellation. That's part of Mosaic, the movement, which our mutual friend Michelle Bleckner is the founder of. And one of the first instructor, or the first person that came down to, his name is Jan Jacob Stam, and one of the things that he said is, what he was looking at his third career, kind of the things that when he was doing his thing, he said, one of the things that he wanted to explore was assuming responsibility. Like, what did it mean to really assume responsibility and all the consequences of that?
Right. And how many times a day do we give our power away?
Oh, exactly.
Right? And so...
That really hit a chord with me.
Yeah.
The assumption of responsibility... The full assumption of responsibility.
Right.
That hit something with me that was very old.
Right.
You know?
So that supports what we're saying.
Yeah.
If you're getting a chemical, if you're having a physical reaction, and you step back for a second before you react, and you say, "What is this triggering in me?
Mm.
Why am I feeling this way?" You already have shifted. Because, like, you know, in constellations, which is systemic work, you're...
Can you explain, just from your... I mean, maybe people that are listening don't know what a constellation is. So
right.
could you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Over 50 years ago, a gentleman called Bert Hellinger, German, brought to the forefront different modalities, and he came... He was a priest. He was exempt from the German army. It was something in his health or whatever. I'm not exactly sure of the story, but he was exempted, so he didn't have to be a soldier. And his family was not part of the party and not in alignment with what was happening. So he entered the priesthood and he became a priest, and he went to Africa, and he was a headmaster of a school in Africa with the Zulu tribe. And he noticed that the Zulus brought everything to the community. So when there was an issue in the community, the elders and the whole tribe, the whole village would come together and bring the issue out. If there was a murderer and he murdered somebody, then he would have to go live with the victim's family and take the place of the person that he murdered.
Oh, wow.
So it was bringing everything to the community. What they found is when they would create this circle where everyone was in the community, they created like a vortex, like a field, like the morphic field.
Yeah.
So we call it the knowing field. And the field would allow the ancestors to speak.
Mm.
Now, that's in a village and a tribe. And in the old days, we would honor the ancestors because we would still have stayed in our village and our
yeah.
So the ancestors would be given their place and acknowledged. Okay. Mm. When we started moving into big cities and cosmopolitan, we disconnected from the ancestors. So then we disconnected from the patterns and we didn't see them because we moved to different cities. Maybe there was estrangement, exclusion, and so the family didn't talk about them, and we didn't know our history, so we couldn't connect to it. So we weren't able to acknowledge that we were repeating patterns or that our parents repeated patterns.
Yeah.
So what happens in the field, the ancestors that have the issues that we're working on healing find a way to make their presence known to us, whether it's through a book or a song or an experience or some other family that has similar, and then all of a sudden we find them.
And Bert Hellinger was a psychologist, right?
He became a psychologist after he left the priesthood.
Oh, wow.
So he worked a lot with Virginia Satir's work and Carl Jung's work.
Yeah.
And then he worked with Hunter Beaumont, and he had Rupert Sheldrake.
Okay.
So they worked, and he started in the beginning, it was more about the psychological, like what are you feeling,
this
is what you need to do. And there were some very specific rules in the flow. And then through his work, he started to realize that there was something bigger that was happening. It was more than just the psychological, and it was and then he started with the spirit mind.
Mm.
And the energetic field, the knowing field.
Yeah.
So it was more like you're connecting to something much bigger than you. And he started a new certification where he allowed others than psychologists and psychiatrists to come in. And then it was more like energy workers and Reiki masters and people who just wanted to share systemic family constellations. And we trained. I went to Germany in 2007, which itself
2007.
Was, yeah, which in itself was a journey into the systemic. that was the first international training, and we were in Austria, in Sound of Music country, which it was really like that. It was like, you know, the mountains and the little Bavarian houses and the farms, and it was really very interesting. And it was the spa of the Steiner family, which is very well known in Germany of being like the Steiner schools and like a Montessori mentality,
okay.
Very open.
Yeah.
The spa was an 800-year-old monastery.
Really?
So it had its own
energy thing going on, yeah.
And there were 250 or about 300 people there from all over the world who took this first training. And it was 10 days of bringing up family issues, country issues, and seeing the movement and just being like, wow, this is something so incredible. Because getting there, just getting to Austria, having to fly into Germany, was something that I never thought I would ever do. to be loyal to my family.
Yeah.
Because my father was like, you know, after the war, nothing German. No, not even an eyebrow pencil.
Wow.
You know, it was like,
yeah,
and
of course,
anyone who
and
did
so
it was like there was
between,
so much judgment. So it was like a jump right into family healing. You know, here you are. And my sister always laughed, and she goes, you go to Germany once and you're healed. Like, how does this happen? But it wasn't totally. And he talked about reconciliation and reconciling with the perpetrator.
Yeah.
And that the victim and perpetrator have to reconcile for there to be peace and to break the pattern.
Hmm.
So one of the things that Hellinger says is that the soul of the perpetrator goes into the victim.
Okay.
So victim energy perpetuates perpetrator energy. And perpetrator energy creates victim energy. So like you see in Germany that there's they're not having as many children, and so that perpetrator energy created so much victim energy that there's an imbalance, because the younger generation, there's a lot of disconnection.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to talk about their past. They don't want to talk about the history of the country.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just World War II. It was World War I as well.
World War I was atrocious.
It was even more atrocious.
Yeah.
I mean, not even more, but it was just they took World War II to a next level because they learned from World War I.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when you look at your family, you look at where is the healing in your family. So in systemic work, you look at the system. So you look at, like, if we were to take African-American,
mm-hmm.
and you would see the dynamic of being taken physically from everything you know and becoming, like, you know, treated like an animal or worse, right? So children became property.
Yeah.
So the more children that, you know, they would have more property and they became value, right?
Yeah.
But there was no family unit.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we need to reconcile in this country.
So if you see, sometimes you'll see that the children are being brought up by the grandmothers because the grandmothers cared for all the children because they couldn't work in the fields anymore.
Of course.
So they had to have like a whole system.
Yeah.
So if you see that the moms are just sometimes disappear and the fathers disappear.
Yeah.
But if you look at it from a systemic point of view, you understand that they're continuing the pattern.
Yeah.
Why are some families not? Because their family line was not torn apart.
Was not torn apart, yeah.
But the value of the father is whenever you look at these sports guys, you know, these athletes, famous athletes, they always say the mom.
Yeah.
And they'll be like 50 and they'll still be like
mom.
Respectful.
Yeah,
and if she smacks them, they'll still be like, no, I can't do this to my mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where does that come from?
Yeah, of course.
But the respect for the dad is not
like that.
The mom was everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, you hear a lot of people that like, well, I didn't have anything to do with slavery. It's like, well,
we all had something to do with slavery.
Oh. We're all, our existence today has a lot to do with that, with the origin of this country. And the same thing with the genocide of the Native American peoples of the United States. We have to, at some point, come to grips and reconcile the atrocities that were committed into this country, and that we were co-creators of those atrocities, and also of the benefits, right? Of both. We're reaping the benefits of both of those things.
But
and
slavery,
until we do that.
But slavery was from the time of before even the Egyptians. That energy just went into different, into different ethnic groups, and it just came. But if you see that the atrocities of the tribe, the stronger versus the weaker, they're still happening in Africa.
Absolutely.
It's still, there's countries, I mean, even in South America, you'll see there's still, that energy is still prevalent.
Yeah, it's always,
we haven't broken those patterns.
Those patterns seem, like they've been in existence for a very long time. But at this point, and at this, it seems like there's been a big shift in who we are as humans, right? That in the last 50, 70 years, there's been a large shift, and that might be with the advent of technology. That might be with, I don't know what's happening, but there seems like there's been a shift towards healing, right? I mean,
yeah, but you still have those that are treated like victims and those that are perpetrators.
That's not going to go away until it would be very, everybody would have to do this right. type of work on a constant basis
right.
for that
but
to get minimized and minimized to a place that it doesn't
right.
exist anymore. But it's to me, looking at the big picture, says we're in a place that we're more prosperous than we've ever been before, right? As a planet, more people have come out of abject poverty than any other time in the history of the human race. And so something's changing. I don't know if it's there's almost like a global movement towards
awareness
or,
well, it starts with an awareness.
Yeah.
And then you start to feel that need to change something.
Yeah.
And by changing your perception and your environment, you see the suffering. So there was also something, same person who talked about driving the car.
Yeah.
Was also about how do you react to person at the light who's asking for money? Okay. Do you judge the fact that, if I give them money, they're going to drink or they're going to get drugs,
they're
not going to get food, they're not going to take care of themselves? Or do you look at that person as the instrument to show you compassion in your life and not judge them as being less than you, but just that they are a mirror of something that you need to connect to? And that if you give them something freely, without judgment, and you see their pain, so maybe they're an angel. You know, they say angels walk among us, right?
Yeah.
You know, there are people that walk among us to show us our compassion. So if you're judging them and saying, well, they're not going to, once you give it, you have no attachment to what they do with it. Your compassion is to see them as a human.
Yeah.
And to share what you can with them.
It's
that's an awareness, right?
It's an opportunity
to practice compassion.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not saying sympathy.
Yeah.
You're not melding with them. You're not entangling.
Yeah. It's like they're the victim of something. You know, I'm a victim and they're a victim.
Why are they homeless?
Yeah.
And
mentally. And then you go into spiral into that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you just say, you know, you are my opportunity to connect with my compassion. And so I empathize with you. I see your pain, but I don't sympathize, so I'm not melding with you. I'm not entangling with you. And then looking at you, I don't see you as a victim. I don't see you as not perfect, but I just see you as another expression on this planet. Right? So I don't have to fix you, but I do have to share my compassion with you.
Yeah.
So then,
without entanglement,
right,
and judgment,
exactly. Yeah. So I'm not judging. I'm just saying, here, this is my opportunity to show my compassion and to share.
Yeah.
So then you look at the gratitude that you have, that you can share, even if it's 50 cents.
Yeah.
You have that. So, who is it? There's on the blog. There's a bunch of blogs, and they say, if you have a roof over your head, clean water, running water in your home, and food on your table, you have more than, what, 80%?
99% of the planet,
yeah.
It's some crazy.
Right.
That might not be, but it's you're better than 99% of the world, yeah.
So
you're part of the 1%.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. You're part of the 1%. As much as we judge the 1%, we're part of the 1% of that.
So do you look at that with a grateful eye, or do you say, I don't have enough, I can't do this, or I can't do that? It's a perception.
Yeah.
So we have a chance all the time in our existence to change our awareness. So then we become more in alignment and we can balance our perpetrator and victim and walk in the middle.
Yeah.
So we're part dark and part light.
Yeah.
You can't only be a light, and you can't only be meditating and floating because you're not grounded.
Because you're not grounded, yeah.
But you can't only be in the dark. Where there is light, darkness cannot exist.
Yeah.
But without the dark, light can't show anything.
Yeah.
So you can't be either or. You have to be both.
Yeah.
And you have to embrace both.
Yeah.
And you have to.
Can you look up the that statistic on if you're the 1% global?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know exactly what it is.
Yeah. So when you look at those things and you can zoom out, then you're not judging your existence.
Yeah.
And so then you go back to the knowing field where you say, okay, we look at our parents and we blame them. Like mainstream psychology or psychiatry says, oh, your mother's to blame for everything, your father's to blame for everything. Okay, but if you can look at your parents, and there's an exercise that we do in Constellations where you just say to your father and your mother, thank you for life.
Mm.
Because in a systemic Constellations
view, thank you for life, yeah.
The father's responsibility ends when he creates life. Anything after that is cream.
It's just
the whipped cream, right? The mother's responsibility is to give birth.
Hmm.
Anything after that is also cream.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You are literally in existence.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So you say to them, thank you for creating life.
Yeah.
And and you don't go to the circumstances. And you don't go to the baggage that they brought in.
Yeah.
You were a good parent. You were a bad parent. You were there. You weren't there.
Yeah.
You gave me up. Because no matter what they did, you wouldn't have life or anything to be
you
grateful
exist,
or
yeah.
complain about if they didn't create life.
Yeah. You wouldn't exist. Yeah.
So by just acknowledging that and working at not judging them for all this, for all the decisions or choices that they made,
no.
if you could just look at them as two people that came together and created life.
Yeah,
in whatever circumstance, that's not easy.
That's not easy.
That's not easy.
You know what, kind of going to the second part of that, is one of the things that the story of Christ, right, of the crucifixion, and you hear when Christ tells God and says, "Why, Father, why have you forsaken me?" is almost like, why have you given me all this baggage that I have to go through this, excuse my French, but I have to go through this shit, you know, this horrible situation and die and become anew, right? So that story has always, and now that I've started to see religious stories in a different context, I saw that, like, that moment of the death of Christ, and in that moment he says, Father, why have you forsaken me? It's almost like if you have your fridge, clothes on your back, a roof over your head, and a place to sleep, you're richer than 75% of the world. That's a statistic, right?
Yeah. So
jeez.
By changing our awareness and by embracing more compassion,
yeah,
embracing compassion to ourselves first, because if we don't embody it, if we don't project it out of our field, then we can't really share it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, when you start to become more aware of your energetic field, you know when people are not telling you the truth.
Yeah,
and
of course.
And you can feel it.
You can feel it, yeah.
You just feel it. Everybody has the ability to access those parts of their brain that are connected to ESP and the knowing and the premonitions and all that.
Yeah.
We just don't believe that we can.
And we're not quiet enough to either.
Right, because you have to really be quiet to get that. But you feel. So you know, like, and then you filter it through your brain. You're like, no, it's my imagination.
You justify it.
Or you take it personal.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, they don't like me, when it may not have anything to do with you at all. It's them.
Yeah.
But
you're
feeling their energy and you feel that they're not being truthful. So you automatically assume it's something to do with you when it's not.
the Ivan, you know, Ivan Pollock's exercise, that to me, it has been one of the most impactful moments of my life. And for those who don't know, so we did the first iteration of Mosaic, right? The workshop that we did.
Yeah.
The pre-training, which was in August. Ivan set up, Ivan is a facilitator out of California. He set up a camera where you would look at somebody. He would look you straight in the face and ask you the questions, right?
He created a film.
Yeah. It was a film. I think it's on...
it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube or on Vimeo.
Right.
And the community... I had a moment, and this is... I feel like I'm a crazy person when I tell this story. I had a moment where we communicated without saying words.
Yeah.
And it's like being quiet enough to let those things surface, because it's like fleeting, right? It's like a breeze. It's like you almost, if you look at it too long, it will go away. But there was a subconscious communication that happened,
right?
And I feel like a crazy person when I tell people right. about it. That's insane.
Yeah, but it's like you're driving, and then all of a sudden you turn, and you're like, why did I turn? And then you realize that there was an accident over there and you missed it. Or it's those premonitions where you're quiet, where it's just like you're not thinking and you become like a... So they come in and they assist you. The consciousness takes you someplace else. Like, I had to go on Friday to two appointments. One was in South Miami and then one was at Brickell. And I was going by the GPS and I mistakenly made a right turn, which actually took me directly to Brickell instead of going west to come back east.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, so this was not a mistake. This is the right, because I was in alignment with the flow and I wasn't getting up like rushing or anxious. Yeah. I was just like, okay, I'm going to my next appointment calmly. And I made it there in less time.
Jeez.
Than the GPS.
Yeah.
Because I would have gone west.
It almost seems like the facilitating family constellations or facilitating constellations comes from the same place. That you quiet yourself enough to say, what is the field telling me? And that's where that intuition comes from, right? Like that.
It's a little more than quieting yourself, because it's kind of like you have to take yourself out of yourself.
Yeah.
So you have to be really quiet, but you have to get out of your mind.
Mm, yeah.
So when we create the knowing field and participants come, one thing, the main thing that we say is, this is a modality, this is a work of the heart, of feelings. This is not your mind. When you're in your mind, you're overthinking and you're filtering, and that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
So you come in, and the person who brings an issue to the field, they may think that they know where it's coming from. And then the people who represent the players in that scenario, say they represent the mother, the father, or whoever, right? Could be a country, could be an illness, anything. Given the freedom of the field, show them where the real issue is, not in their mind.
Yeah.
So we've seen, I mean, you've been there with me, and I've been doing this for 12 years. I've seen incredible things. And you go, you can't make this up.
You can't make, yeah.
Because the representative actually starts to say that we were in one constellation where the guy said, I have no feeling in my right arm. I have absolutely no feeling in my right arm. It's like it's not there. And he was representing an uncle who was in World War I. And the person whose constellation it was said, yeah, he lost his right arm in World War I.
Oh, wow.
And he did his, so it wasn't there. And you're like.
Yeah, it just.
And they don't know each other at all. So I can share one personal experience. We were doing a training with Bert Hellinger in Louisville, Kentucky. And we had groups of 15, and he did a lot of exercises, because it was more for facilitators or people who wanted to do the work. And I was lucky, and it was a father exercise. So you had to do something with someone represent your father and someone you represented yourself. And if you go down to the floor, it's that you're connected to the dead souls of your family. And the person who represented my father went down to his knees. And so the person who was facilitating put three, four, five, or something like that, people lying down. And my father reached out his hand to hold my hand, but never turned to me, always looking at the dead ones. And I realized that he felt so guilty that he couldn't save his family, that he lived with that guilt. And when you have that kind of survivor guilt, you actually can really make yourself ill. So he had five heart attacks. He had, I mean, you name it, he had.
Almost chasing death.
Yeah.
In honor to the ancestors.
Right. I have to perpetuate life.
Yeah.
That's my obligation.
Yeah.
So I have to do that. But I'm not going to embrace life enough to really enjoy it, to be happy. And I looked at that and I realized that his being so hard on me of like making us like overachievers, you have to do this. Yes, you, it's good, but you have to do better. It's good, but you have to do better. It's good, but you have to do better. And always teaching us, okay, how to take care of ourselves. Like, yeah, you can change the oil in the car. You can change a tire. You can do this.
Be resourceful.
Even though you're a woman, you can do this because you have to survive.
Mm.
You have to continue to put one foot in front of the other and never give up.
And it's almost like not doing that is not honoring the people that sacrificed or the people that went through the things that they went through in order for you to be. Yeah,
Exactly. So
that's a big burden to carry. That's a big burden to carry. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and you know, they were saying, you know, my daughter is my sunshine. And I was saying, like, look at the responsibility that you're putting on your daughter.
Right.
Your life depends on them. That's not the position for the child.
Right.
It's too much weight for the child to carry to say that you're you know, that you, they're the source of your life, of your, you know, what the sun represents is the source of energy of everything.
Yeah. So going back to the acknowledging the parents and without baggage, the next thing in constellations is the hierarchy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a specific hierarchy and everyone has to be in a place. And if there's anyone missing, people have to fill that.
Yeah.
So you're the tip of the pyramid. Then your parents are behind you. So your mother's always on the left. The females are always on the left, closest to the heart. And the males are always on the right. So it's your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, all the way back, right? So if you go back seven generations, you're the tip of the iceberg for 254 ancestors.
254 people, yeah.
Now, what about the excluded ones? What about the ones we don't talk about? What about the, you know, the first lover of your great-grandfather, where if she hadn't stepped away, your great-grandfather wouldn't have married your great-grandmother and you wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
So all of those people are part of your family. They have an impact on your family. They have an impact on where you go, what country you're in or not in. So if your father or your great-great-grandfather died and he was missing, and the child of that, like your great-grandfather, right, stepped in to be the partner of your grandmother, then maybe he wasn't totally available for his wife.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And so then you have a different pattern that comes up, the sadness. So then,
for the parent not being available.
Right, the lost parent.
Yeah.
So then maybe three, four generations down, men don't get married.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they're connected to that sadness because the child says, I love you unconditionally, unconsciously, of course, right?
Yeah.
I will suffer for you.
I will even
sacrifice my life for you.
Even
if it costs me my life, which is a book by Stephen Hausner, who wrote about illnesses and how they connect to systemic patterns in the family. Right. So the child will suffer for the parent. So the child maybe will create that same pattern. So women where there was a lost child and the great-great-grandmother was devastated. So then you get to the point where the same thing, where maybe four or five generations, the women they're not able to have children.
Yeah, or lose their first pregnancy.
Lose
multiple pregnancies or lose a pregnancy, yeah.
So you're connecting to that loyalty, right? Or divorce. And then you'll see in families, we have this thing called a genogram, but we do it in more...
genogram?
Yeah, so it's more detailed than a family tree.
Okay.
So you go in and you do like a mapping with the facilitator does a mapping with the client. And you look at the people in your family, but you look at them when they were born, when they died.
Okay.
How many times were they married? How many children did they have? Did they have illnesses? Did they have any traumatic things? Did they have a loss of fortune, a gain of fortune? Was there a war? So you look at all of the things that happened in their life. What was their profession? And then you go back and you do this, and then
it's like
how many siblings?
Family tree on steroids.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you start to see patterns. You see patterns in professions being chosen. You see patterns. This generation left a country, then this generation left a state, then this generation left a city. And you see movements. So if there's not a reconciliation with leaving country of origin, then you'll see movements. And you'll see that people are not completely successful because they're not completely present, because they're still being loyal to that sadness of leaving something.
Yeah.
And in survivors of the Holocaust and their children, second and third generation Holocaust survivors, is that you can't get past that wall of that trauma. And so you can't get beyond to see the successful ancestors, to see the happy ancestors, to see the joyous ancestors. So you can't connect beyond that giant trauma.
Yeah.
And once you can go back and access those ancestors and ask them to assist you, because there is success in every family.
Yeah, of course.
But we're so connected to that we have major depression and all of those things that are
Think that in families that kind of the negative events have more power than the positive events?
I saw it in my own family.
Really?
I saw that, because a lot of survivors couldn't talk about what happened with their children. So you have a disconnect. So
there's an exclusion, almost. Like when you don't talk about something, and that's the thing that...
It's not an exclusion as a disconnect.
Yeah.
With you're disconnecting. Yeah, it's an exclusion. You're right. Because you're excluding.
You can't even look at it.
Those perpetrators.
Yeah. You can't even look at it. It's
so huge.
You can't even look at the thing. Right.
So they don't talk about it. So then you don't realize until you're an adult that you don't even have a medical history in your family.
Yeah.
Because they didn't talk about anything.
Yeah.
You don't know what they did.
Yeah.
A lot of families do, and most of them don't.
Yeah.
So you've got this disconnect to when you start to see things that are happening in the family. So they say bipolar is in constellations. The definition is the perpetrator and the victim are in the same body.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then they say suicide is the same.
It is the same, yeah.
Is that the perpetrator and victim, and they have to destroy each other.
Yeah, the
loyalty.
Suicide is the most egregious act of perpetrator and victim in one person, because you are the victim and you're the perpetrator at the same time. Same thing with self-abuse.
Right.
It's you are the perpetrator with one hand and the victim on the other. You know, people, they say that about, I've heard this about people that cut.
Yeah.
That it's usually there's abuse patterns in the family when people that do cutting. Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't have to be the Holocaust. It could be many different things because there's no lack of trauma.
And it's all relative to each system, right? If it was.
Right.
Yeah. It's all relative to each system.
But then, how many systems do you belong to?
Yeah.
Then you go to
that.
And so systemic work is Like, okay, so you're a white male.
Yeah.
You're a white Latin male.
Yeah.
You're a veteran.
Yeah.
You know, your ancestry came from
Venezuela and from, you know, Michigan Europe. Europe. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're a father of young children in America.
Yeah.
You can go on and on and on.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a male. Every single system has its inherent knowledge, right? Or download of operating system, you know, how I call it. Yeah.
And then your loyalties to your country.
Yeah.
So,
and to my parents and to where they come from.
Exactly.
And their patterns and religion wise and, you know, everything that comes with it.
Wow. Right. How many systems is
that? Oh, no, yeah. There's infinite, really. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So, but you have to look at how you relate in your life. So if you can just step back and not try and figure out all the systems, but understand that you're part of systems.
Yeah.
And you look at, okay, so this issue of when I drive in traffic, I have rage because people just cut me off.
You know,
they drive like they do in South America, like in Mexico. You know, nobody has a turn signal and this. What are you connecting to?
Yeah.
What are you connecting to?
Yeah, that's the my biggest thing, especially being a father of little kids, right? I'm just like, I'm going to deal with as much crap as I can so you guys are free to do whatever you want to do with your life. You know, to do it with the best, cleanest, you know, with a bank account that's not in the negative, right? That you're not owing a bunch of, you know, stuff to past generations. And it's like, I'm just going to do that. If I can get to that place and you have a fresh start, we're in good shape. And then you can live your life the way that you live it. But it's not really that binary, right? It's not really that.
Well, no, but in your case, like, look at how you started to do that. And then your parents started to get involved, and they started to take back their issues.
Yeah.
And then they started working on their stuff.
You
actually do see it.
Yeah, the ripple effects of breaking of one person in the family, which in my case was my mom started it, right? With one person that started in the family, the ripple effects that's have over the past 12 years, 13 years in the family have been vast and wide.
Right.
I just don't know how. I won't ever know the implications of how profound those changes have been.
Right.
You know, maybe when I cross onto the other side and, you know, I'm able to do the Wikipedia of the other side and find out really the information of it. But, I won't know of what that looks like until, you know,
I
gain that knowledge.
And no matter how long you're doing it, the issues come up and you're like, well, this is an issue I worked on.
Yeah.
But you're working at it on such a deeper level.
You're
letting go of certain things. Like, I had a brother who died in the war when he was a year old.
Mm.
But my mom never talked about it. I think I was 9 when they told me I found out by accident.
Older?
Right? Older.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I had a brother who died in the war, and then I have a brother who is 13 years older than I am, and then my sister was 9.5 years older than me. And I knew about him, but he didn't really have an existence for me.
Yeah, didn't have a place.
I knew that I was fourth and all of that, and with consolations, I would acknowledge him. And, you know, in the Jewish tradition that on Yom Kippur, you light a candle for your immediate family, you know. And when my sister passed away 3 years ago, I started lighting candles for her. And then 2 years ago on Yom Kippur, I was like, wait a minute. I have another sibling that I haven't been lighting candles for.
Wow.
And it was like,
well, yeah, that's, I mean, just the acknowledgement of that position, the ripple effects of that can be astronomical.
So I started lighting candles for him as well. Because how do I light a candle for my sister who I knew?
Yeah.
And be in alignment because I wasn't lighting a candle for my brother who I didn't know.
Wow.
But I had a cousin who is a first cousin. He was in Dachau. And he was his father was the oldest of 12. My father was the second to the youngest. So he came to this country through the orphans of, you know,
the
organization.
Yeah.
And so he was brought here and he was waiting. He found my parents. And when they came, once they were able to, he came to live with them way before I was born because he was much older than me. He took the place of the lost brother, and my parents took the place of his parents.
Yeah.
And so they didn't have to adopt him because they had the same family name, but he was my brother.
Yeah.
He took the place, and for me, he was the brother.
Yeah.
Until I realized that they were both.
Wow.
So I light a candle for him also, even though I'm not supposed to because he's not really my brother. But for all intents and purposes, labels don't really describe who the person is in your life, right? Friend doesn't really describe how deep that relationship goes, right?
Yeah.
Soul sister or soul brother doesn't either. There's that connection that there's always somebody who takes the place of somebody else.
Yeah, and if you look at the systems, not for just the exclusion, but also for the inclusion.
Exactly.
There's an inclusion as well.
Right.
Like if you grew up in those scenarios, like you had a family that was put together for, you know, whatever reason, it becomes the system, right? And just like with companies, it becomes a system. It becomes, and the more you're in close proximity to somebody, you form your system, right?
Right.
We're all energy, and the exclusion, the opposite of exclusion is inclusion, and that has its dynamics as well.
Yeah, so that brings up this story of after the war. There was the Jewish Agricultural Society, and they were trying to get the survivors out of New York and places. So they created the Jewish chicken farmers. And there's books about this, and they went to Connecticut, New Jersey, and Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And my parents were receivers of that, and I was born in Rhode Island. My dad had a chicken farm.
Oh, wow.
And they came together. There were like 50 families, 50 survivor families, and 10 American Jewish families in this little town in Connecticut. And they gathered money to build a synagogue.
Okay.
And the community, the churches and the whole community donated money, and they all got together and they built the synagogue, which now has historic status in Danielson, Connecticut. And in 1956, they had the first interfaith Thanksgiving at the synagogue because the whole community helped them to heal. So every function, religious and social, centered around the synagogue. So when I was a kid, everybody's engagement party, bar mitzvah, holiday, Thanksgiving, everything was there. So there was the sisterhood, so all the women cooked.
Yeah.
And every party was there. So everything we did was centered around that. And like you said, those people became family.
Became family, yeah.
So my mom's best friend, she was like an aunt.
Yeah.
But we weren't related.
You weren't related, yeah.
But because they created that system of families who created this synagogue, but it was more than a religious, it was a social. It was, we're going to heal.
Yeah. I mean, there was, on my first constellation that I ever did, and I wanted to, that kind of begs the next question that I wanted to ask you was, so when my parents got divorced, my sister, mom, and I came into this, like, triangle of just, like, emergency response. You know, it was just this kind of, all right, batten down the hatches, us three, you know, kind of linked at the arm, and my mom, you know, like the person representing my mom was like, like this lion lady, you know, and us, you know, kind of in the back, like hunkered down, and we maintained that dynamic for a long time, and that created conflict between the three of us, right? So there's no room for anybody else, right? When you're in that kind of conflict or that survival mechanism, right? And so my first constellation when I did it was, okay, you have to grow to a place, or you have to be comfortable enough with a place where you can create space where other people can join the system, right? So I wouldn't have, if I would have maintained that system, I would have never been able to get married to my wife and have kids and do that system. Do you think that in communities that have gone through atrocities, does that happen, and then that system creates conflict? So something that was create a system that was created in order to survive later creates conflict just because of proximity of systems. Is that is that something that you've seen? Or
yes, and you could take that into refugee camps.
Yeah.
Okay. Where you have multiple generations, and you see how it breeds the perpetrator.
And they start preying on each other.
And the rage. So then they start first preying on each other, and if you don't do what I say or you don't join my group, then I'll kill you or your family.
Yeah.
So then they, you know, we're your family now. So it's like... So even like in a gang system where we're not judging it, we're just observing it. So you look at that and you're saying your family system is so terrible. We're going to give you a way to include yourself with us. Mm. Exclude them.
Exclude
so then
them,
they
include,
become the
yeah.
excluded one. So who are they representing in the family? Where is the family excluding another system so that they someone
well,
has
you're
to follow
excluding
them?
Yourself from that family system, right?
But the system, but the family is excluding themselves from some
system. So larger system itself.
So that child unconsciously is saying, I will suffer for you, and excludes himself to the point of sacrificing his life or having to be incarcerated. Or if you look at political prisoners and you look at the family dynamic and you go back generations, that's where we do the in the genogram, you can see where, three generations behind somebody was arrested as a political prisoner, and then you see incarceration.
Yeah. And that happens a lot in countries that have been colonized.
Right.
Yeah, political prisoners happens usually in countries that have
right.
been colonized.
Or
yeah.
you'll see at a certain age, a child will move. Right?
Yeah.
So when you left Venezuela, was it in any relation to your parents' age when they left their country?
100%.
So you start,
my dad left Venezuela when he was around that age.
Right.
He went to go to school in Michigan.
See? Yeah. So you see repeats and patterns, and they're not always bad patterns.
Yeah, they
so
just are. Yeah.
They just are. The good or bad is what we attach to it. So one of my philosophies in all the years that I've been working on constellations and just spiritual empowerment and, growth is that whatever's happening, there is no right or wrong. It just is.
It just is, yeah.
And if we could see it as it just is.
Yeah. That's,
and we're not attaching things. And so we're just like, okay, so where am I feeding this?
Yeah.
And how's it going to keep going on? And then we go back to, I'm responsible for what's happening, so I can change it.
Yeah.
But it's about my perception. So if I see it as not bad, but just is, then I can look at it a little more detached and really observe it.
Yeah.
Whereas...
And the emotional entanglement's not there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm not having an emotional reaction.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can shift out of it a little more. Yeah. So there's the mindfulness where I'm...
And it's resolved. It's not like it's, you don't cut it off and let it go away. It's just there. It's part of your history, just like anything else. And you don't have to repeat it because you've acknowledged it. And it's
right.
there.
You're
right.
You're just observing it.
You're just absorbing it with just for what it is.
Right. So like people who are listening, right, they'll say, okay, well, you're oversimplifying it. But take a scenario where you have a conflict with a coworker at work or your boss. Your boss is not acknowledging you. Your boss doesn't appreciate you. You're not getting paid what you think you should get paid. Okay. So you're looking at that as in the victim energy, right? Oh, they don't appreciate me. They don't see it. I'm not getting paid enough. Step back, okay? And look at your boss and look at his ancestors behind him.
Yeah.
And look at him as a person.
Yeah.
Not as your boss.
Yeah.
Not as the person who's not allowing you to move forward.
To succeed, yeah.
Okay? But what is he bringing with him? And then if you can see him being present, and your approach changes because you're not coming with a combative energy.
Yeah.
Right? So then you practice an act of kindness.
Yeah. Yeah, and also what am I bringing to this that I'm putting myself in the situation that I'm like a victim will always find a perpetrator and a perpetrator will always find a victim.
Always.
You know, it's always like
every
dance we have, we'll always find a place where I was having this conversation with somebody and they were, you know, they're in their language. It was always, you know, these people are taking advantage of these people. I'm getting taken advantage by this. And I'm like, you will always, as long as you identify with the victim, you will always find a perpetrator in every single scenario.
Right.
And you'll create a world where you are the victim of things to be right.
Yeah.
It's to say my – and that's what I was saying earlier is like righteousness, being right feels so good.
Yeah,
because you're loyal to the system. You know,
right.
You're being loyal to the system.
Exactly.
Because it comes from a place of love.
Right. So sometimes that's a blind loyalty that you don't even realize. And the loyalty is so strong that even when it becomes a conscious loyalty, it's almost – it's very difficult to break it.
Yeah.
So you're being loyal to something that – you're not even aware of.
Yeah.
And then when you start to step back and say, I'm responsible for my life, those things start to show themselves as the patterns.
That's huge.
Right.
But
it's, you know, people are going to be listening and they're going to say, oh, they make it sound so simple.
Yeah, of course.
And it's the, but it's not. But
it's the hardest thing that I've ever done is that.
They say that a marriage or any relationship takes work.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But who's our first relationship with?
Our mother.
No, ourselves.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's
ourselves. So we don't invest time in our relationship with ourselves.
Yeah,
we're
that's our first
externalizing
relationship.
Externalizing it and having relationship with our mother or our significant other.
First relationship is with ourselves. You're right.
Right?
That's what was Thursday's workshop on.
Yeah.
Was your first relationships with yourself, and how do you treat yourself?
How do you treat yourself? So there's so one exercise that we found is really powerful is you look in the mirror and you put a timer, so you do 5 minutes, and 5 minutes seems like an eternity in the beginning, right? And you get comfortable. You can sit down. You can use a hand mirror or a standing mirror, or you can stand up in the bathroom or anywhere, and you start to look at yourself in your eyes, but deep, deep in your own eyes, deep.
Oh, wow.
Beyond the mirror, go into the pupil, and you just look in your own eyes, and you just say, I see you.
Wow.
And then see what happens. You may start to cry.
Yeah, that's super powerful.
But who are you connecting with?
You're connecting with yourself, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And who are you? You are the tip of the iceberg of those lives.
254 people.
Right?
Yeah.
So life passed through them, not from them, but through them to you.
Yeah.
Now, life is not just physical children. Life is also projects. Animals.
Creation.
Create anything.
Any creation, relationship, dynamic.
Right, because a project has to be nurtured. A business has to be nurtured. You can't just leave it. So those are connections also. But when you see you and you know where you stand in your family and you're solid, you're grounded, the way you look at life is so different.
Yeah.
Because you're not judging yourself. You're not negative talking yourself.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize, well, we talked about the flowers and the 20 million types of flowers. You're a unique soul, a spark that was in the Big Bang. You know, all these sparks were created and we all became those souls, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything in this world that isn't perfect? No.
Yeah.
The flowers, they know how to grow by themselves, die.
Yeah.
So if God or the source or the universal, whatever,
or whatever
you
want to call it, yeah.
There's a cycle. There's nothing that is imperfect.
Yeah.
So how could we not be perfect?
Yeah.
So we just are.
We
and
just
if we
are.
Would stop judging ourselves about our body, we're to this, we're to that, just looking at the outside.
Yeah.
Oh, I have wrinkles, my hair color, my this, my that. Just look in your eyes and see how perfect you are. Connect with your soul. And then you can actually just move through certain things because you're not connected to the emotion.
Yeah.
You see you.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it looked at it that way.
And then the next thing you say is, and this takes time, but even if you just start to say it, even if you don't completely believe it, it starts the momentum of the energy. And you say,
yeah.
I love you just the way you are.
Mm. Yeah, that's a big act. It's to say the act of self-love is a big act. Yeah. And it's extremely powerful.
Yeah. But if you don't love you, how can you love anyone else?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, and that's what and I keep going back to scripture, and I don't know because I'm kind of on this tangent of seeing scripture from a different perspective.
Right.
Like I've rediscovered it in this new perspective. And you know, it says what it says in scripture, it says love thy neighbor like you love yourself.
Right.
And the first thing that you have to do is love yourself. Because if you can't love yourself, there's no possible way that you can love your neighbor.
Right. Because if you don't love yourself, you're going to like come from that place
exactly.
with your neighbor.
Exactly. You're going to come from the same place from your neighbor. And it's just like the most important is like, everybody says love thy neighbor. It's like, that's not the point. The point is you love yourself first and foremost to be able to love thy neighbor. And that's where you can do that. Because
right.
if you can't, apart from that place of origin.
Because it's not selfish, it's selfless.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at you, it's not that you're just thinking about just you.
Yeah.
So we're not saying look at you and just you're the most important thing in the world. You're the most important thing for you.
Yeah.
But how you treat you is how you treat others and how others will treat you.
Exactly.
So if you are in that victim energy,
if
like
you're
you
in
said,
that victim energy,
you're gonna attract things to show you how to heal.
Yeah.
But you're
yeah.
not seeing them as a healing. You're seeing them as another reaction to
I'm putting
I'm a
myself
victim.
In the situation.
I'm a victim.
Yeah, I'm a victim. To be right. To be right. It's like you know how you on the planes where they say you put the mask on yourself before you can put it on the child?
Yeah.
You have to put it on yourself first because
right.
if not, you're useless.
Yeah, so that adage is when you're on the plane and the oxygen masks come down, they say you have to put yours on first so you can help anyone else.
Exactly.
Because if you don't, you're going to pass out.
You're going to pass out
right.
and you'll be a... You're going to... You'll take one. You're going to take another one with you because...
Right.
So, you know, it won't be a one. It will be a two, right?
Exactly. So that's what you're saying is that you have to... You have to practice self-care at all levels.
And I was coming through this, and I was kind of having this thought process about being selfish. It's like self it's being, you know, and it was going back to what Jan Jacob Stam said at the thing. It's like our first act as humans is to take. It's we take life from the mother. The mother doesn't say, I allow you to, you know, to take nourishment from my body. You just take it, right? And when you're born, you take your first breath. And the first act that we have as in our existence is an act of taking. It's an act of self-love, right? Is taking care of ourselves first.
And then
and
the second
we lose
act
that.
Is separation.
Yeah, and the second act is separation, but we lose ourselves. We lose that act of, I have to take care of me first. And along the way we say, no, I'm going to sacrifice myself for you.
Because we're
and
grieving
it goes into the
separation.
Exactly. But it goes into the victim, you know, scenario where I'm saying, I am laying my, you know, like that, you know.
Because we're grieving separation.
Yeah.
It's a separation because that separation connects us to life.
Yeah.
Because if we don't separate, we die.
If we don't separate, we die. Yeah.
Right?
And if we don't separate, we both die.
Right. So the first success that we encounter in our life is birth.
Yeah.
And the first trauma is
birth.
Is birth.
Yeah.
So they're both
at the same time. At the same time. At the point of, yeah. Yeah.
Right? So
yeah, that's
even
big.
In this day and age, and with all our technology and everything, it's still the most dangerous thing to do is to give birth to a child.
I would imagine, yeah.
Even with technology.
I've been there twice. I've seen, like, I haven't been there on the birthing side, but I've been there to experience it, and it is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. It's such a powerful act, right? It's the most, it's the most insane thing that I've been in presence of, right? I've never been,
well,
there's nothing that's been more impressive than that from a human experience side than the birth of a person, right?
Yeah.
Like I told my son the other day, I was like, Tony, I saw you come into this world. Like I was the first person that you saw coming into this world.
Yeah. Right. He's like, yeah. You know? And the thing is like I gave birth to my children.
Yeah.
But I was able to be there for my daughter when she gave birth to my grandson.
That's, yeah.
So I actually saw that.
You saw from you that experienced side. Both. That's incredible.
And it's really something to watch your own child. You know,
give birth to a child.
Yeah.
I mean, how powerful is that?
That's
Oish.
Because then you realize I've passed life through me.
Yes.
And it's really
I'm getting goosebumps.
Powerful.
Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps.
And then you want to do all the more work of breaking the pattern because you want to leave that your account is at zero balance.
Yeah, and the account is, you know.
You're not taking any debt.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
working on a positive.
Yeah.
So the other thing that they say is by those separations, by doing the self-care, is you're creating healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
So you can be you.
You can be you, yeah.
And you don't have to, like, judge you. So they say in that tone, they say saying yes to self, saying no to others is saying yes to self.
Yeah.
But you're doing it logically, aware, open mind. You know, you're not judging. So if you do something for somebody out of obligation, then you're not in the flow.
No.
Because you're not doing it freely. You're doing it with an attachment.
Yeah, with an attachment, yeah.
So if you don't feel that you should do it, there's a way, in a kind, compassionate way, to say no.
Yeah, to say no.
I'm not saying just say, no, I don't feel like doing it for you because I'm thinking of myself first. But you there's always a way to...
Yeah, to say it with love.
To say it with love, right?
That's one of the things that a thought that's come to me a lot is that, you know, if you have the strength to say no and have boundaries, you will have the strength to bear responsibility.
You'll start
to have the strength to bear responsibility. And that is to bear the responsibility. Like when you have a solid foundation of who you are and have those boundaries set and solidified, you can bear weight.
Right. You can bear weight.
And that's where meaning comes from.
Yeah. When you stop judging your parents.
Yeah.
And just accept them as they are, which takes time. I'm not simplifying because there's terrible
that
situations
times,
about
yeah.
parents
yeah, yeah.
and everything. But if you can just see them start from the place of you gave life.
Yeah.
And you leave the other baggage and the judgments and all of the observations behind and you just say, thank you for the life you gave me.
That's such a great first movement. Just, you know, like people getting into the constellation world.
Right.
To say, you know, you might have had a terrible situation, but you start with, thank you for giving me life.
Right.
And then you start with that foundation.
Right.
Just like... Everything else is, but thank you for giving me life. At least say thank you for that.
Right. And then if you're adopted, then those parents that adopted you, they had a contract. So you've got two moms and two dads.
Yeah.
You don't have less than somebody else.
Yeah.
You actually have more.
Yeah.
And so then... There's a contract because the biological parents gave you life and brought you into the world.
Yeah.
But you get a second life from the adopted parents.
Yeah.
Because they nurture you.
Yeah, it's like getting a bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
when you're acknowledging, excuse me, you're acknowledging both.
Yeah.
And what they say in Constellations is that you have to acknowledge the biological parents.
Of course.
Because if there's... if there's no connection to, like, an adoptive mother, if she really is doing the work, she will acknowledge the biological mother.
Yeah.
Even if she can't find her, she doesn't know her, whatever.
Energetically.
Energetically. Yeah. And then she'll tell the child, you know, I'm your adoptive mother.
Yeah.
Then everyone's in their place.
Everyone's in their place.
And there's a healing. And so you acknowledge. It's just like in relationships. There's no ex.
There's no ex. Yeah, there's no ex.
There's your first wife, your second wife, your first husband, your second husband.
But and they all have their place.
Right. But if you exing them, then you're excluding them.
Yeah.
And then you can't heal to have a better relationship, so you continue the same patterns.
Yeah.
So what you do is you give everybody a chance that you are my first.
Yeah,
thank you for what I learned.
Yeah.
And you just acknowledge that.
It's such a resolution.
Because our experiences create who we are. Yeah. If we hadn't gone through all of the things, I look at my life, you know, I'm 63.
Yeah.
And I look at my life and I see all of the people that I encountered and all of those experiences are who I am today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one of the things, one of the biggest lessons that I learned during doing this work is when you deny your ex and you have a child with them, you're denying 50% of your child.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, my God. Like,
that
was, for me, that was, not to say that my parents or whatever, you know, like, whatever that is, and I think that that's, thank God, all, you know, all has been resolved. But to the power of that, of the implications of judging your ex and the implications that has on your child is...
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because that is exactly that, because your child is 50% of both of you. So if you really love your child, then you have to love all of them.
They're
part of both spouses.
Yeah.
So by using the child as a weapon against the partner or the previous partner is that you're most of the time repeating a pattern because it happened to you.
Of course.
But you're perpetuating that energy and you're creating that pattern for the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And so if you really love your children the way you say you do, is that you don't use them as a tool to manipulate. Because the manipulation is just the exclusion.
Yeah, of course. But they might, most people don't know. That's the thing. And that's the thing about this podcast.
Some people know, and they choose to do it anyway.
Yeah, of course.
But if they can,
or it's a pattern that they've been living
correct
for many years.
But if they see that that isn't serving, and it's not serving anyone, not themselves or their children or their previous partners, then sometimes that awareness comes up, and so they'll get with a Deepak meditation or Oprah or something, because there's lots of people who had very, very hard lives.
Yeah.
Oprah, you know, LeBron didn't have it easy.
There's a lot
of athletes, you know, political or rock stars or anybody, had it difficult.
They had difficult upbringings,
What is his name? I forgot his name. He did a piece on 60 Minutes. He sang the song about Uptown Funk.
Bruno Mars?
Bruno Mars. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So Bruno Mars, they did a piece on him on 60 Minutes. Bruno Mars was homeless.
Really?
He lived in Hawaii in a destroyed, like
a house, abandoned house?
Yeah, abandoned house with no roof or something.
You know what that, Bruno Mars being homeless?
And he lived with his dad, and he tried for, I think it was like 10 years before he got his first hit. He did lounges and...
He was a wedding singer in Hawaii.
Yeah. I don't remember what happened to his mom, but it showed that... But he had this attitude of, you know, gratitude.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a victim.
He wasn't a victim. But also, he...
And look at what he
it
does.
It might not be... Like, most people that are in those situations have both, right? They have extreme success and extreme kind of trauma, right? And you hear about most famous artists that come, and that's their source of where, you know, their lyrics or, you know, you hear a lot of this stuff that comes from these people that are essentially broken people that are expressing their art in a way, and they achieve extreme success, but also have extreme loss in those processes.
But what if they're the example for us? Not the example, but the guide for us, a guide to showing us that it's possible. Like, you know, a lot of people say that Jesus showed us that we could be compassionate and human.
Even though...
And that we have those ways of being the children of God. Do we choose it or don't we choose it?
Yeah. So, we have a choice. We always have a choice, yeah.
Right. So the same thing with these people who have these examples of how they can do it. How did they do it? How did they bring themselves out of it? You know, and were they in alignment? And they definitely didn't think of themselves as victims.
Yeah, that's, you know, you hear about like Gandhi, right? You know, Gandhi had both extremes. Both. He was a complex person, just
extremely.
You know, they had both scenarios. And most people that are just exponentially big on both sides, and they have the ability to be game changers. You know, they can change the how the perception is, but also have, you know, deep dark demons that come with that. You know,
but not just the good examples.
Yeah.
But also the ones who are terrible perpetrators.
Yeah. Of course. Potential, right? You have the potential is infinite for good and for, you know, evil, for creating and for destruction, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's, you hear that's, you know, you, what's, you know, like I always say, you know, I've talked about this a couple of times, like, what is money, right? It's just an amplifier. What is power? It's just an amplifier of whatever dynamics you have internally, right?
Right. So money is energy.
Exactly. Right? It's an amplifier of whatever those things are.
And when you see money as energy, and you realize that when you hoard energy, there's no flow.
Yeah.
So when you share, and that's when those situations of compassion come, where you realize you have more than someone else, but you're not judging it, and you're not saying, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
You're just saying, I'm in a different point of evolution.
Yeah.
And I'm going to share my energy, which is this, and my compassion.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, who are you sharing it with?
Yourself.
Exactly.
Of course. Yeah, it's like, you know, when people say resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die, that's what, you
totally.
Know, this compassion is. It's giving yourself a treat, or giving somebody else a treat that comes back to you, right?
Right.
It's like giving somebody else an act of kindness that it's a selfish act. Again, it's a selfish act that comes from this, that if we believe that we are all, you know, kind of the name of the podcast is Zulu One, because the Zulu tribe of Bert Hellinger, and one, that we're all one consciousness, right? And
right.
So that act of giving to somebody else is an act of giving to yourself, if we believe that we're all one conscious, right?
Right.
We're all one consciousness.
So that's where the anger is. Like, okay, something happens, you're angry, you continue to talk about it. The other person goes home, has a nice dinner.
Yeah.
They don't even care.
They don't
but
care.
You have created a physical expression in your body, where you've got adrenaline and cortisol, and you're creating this physical
reaction,
chemical reaction in your body that is going to keep going. Mm. When if you just, that's yours and not mine.
That's yours and not mine. Yeah, that's, and that we're all, that we all come from the same place.
Right.
And that's it, right?
But see, now that was really good that you reminded us that we're here for Zulu One and the podcast. So you're living a trauma for how many years, whatever your tour is, right?
Yeah.
As a soldier or someone in the military or backup,
right?
Or a contractor. And you're seeing terrible things.
Yeah.
You're seeing man's inhumanity to man.
Man's inhumanity to man, yeah.
And you have to live these things and loss of, you know, comrades and your best friends and your people. Because when you go out on that mission,
yeah,
you're not going out with all of humanity.
No,
you're going out with that group.
With that group, yeah.
And you are watching out for the guy next to you or the woman next to you.
Yeah.
And that's your group. And when something happens in that
group, you're protecting that system.
Yeah. You're protecting that system. And when something happens in that system, it ripples out to all your other systems.
Yeah.
So how do you back up from something terrible that happens in your system that you've seen, that imprint in your that you've seen, that you hear? How do you relate what we've been talking about to, like, okay, this is just a, you know, it's not something you can wrap your head around and say, why was I here? What did this show me? What was this doing for me? How did this make me a better person? It didn't. It made me worse because I can't come down. You know, like the movie Sniper.
We couldn't
come off of that, you know.
Reliving the trauma. Yeah.
Right. So how do you work through that system?
Yeah.
By showing your compassion to another person who is at a different part of their evolution of that trauma.
Yeah.
Somebody maybe who just came back.
Yeah.
And you share.
And you share.
And you create a system of healing.
Yeah.
So that we can all heal and let go. But if you start to look back and you do the genogram in your own family.
Yeah. A lot of people will be.
Then you could connect with, you create a system of healing by creating a new group.
Yeah.
But then you look at, where am I repeating a pattern in my family? Like, did something happen in World War II? Did something happen in World War I?
Yeah.
War of 1812? What? You'll go find it.
You'll find it.
You'll find it. Then you can say, maybe it wasn't all you.
Yeah.
Not that you're relinquishing responsibility to someone else.
Yeah.
Or you're saying I'm a victim. But what you're saying is that I love my family so much
that I'm willing to go through this.
That I repeated the pattern. Yeah. So that I belong in my family.
So I belong in my family. Yeah.
And that's a big thing to wrap your head around.
Yeah. That's a big thing to wrap your head around.
But, like John, like you say, we're here for those people who have those questions. They have a way to contact you.
Yeah.
So you can share with them the understanding of how to take the first step.
Yeah.
Because it's steps.
So one of the things that I've set up is Zulu1podcast@gmail.com is going to be a place where you can send questions. So on the podcast in the future, we'll be able to read those questions and kind of answer them from a systemic perspective.
There's also Facebook.
Yeah, and there's the Facebook that Zulu1. And the point of this podcast is to talk. I'm you know, kind of a knuckle-dragging troglodyte that it's kind of a guide for a guy like me, or, you know, somebody that's of my ilk, right? I was in the military, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a father, I'm kind of all these things, right? And systemic work has always kind of been traditionally outside of my world, right? Because it's, you know, predominantly male and has kind of its intricacies. And so this is a place and a podcast where we can, that I'll be able to interview people that are similar to you and of this kind of type of work that can be talked about in a place that you know, usually systemic work is talked about in, you know, very, very specific scenarios. So I don't know. It's an opportunity for us to have a conversation from, you know, from my perspective, which is seems in some cases a common perspective to say.
But there's one thing that I want to add that's very, very important when doing the systemic work with the facilitators or anything. These are sacred space.
Yeah.
And there's a field that's created of no judgment.
Yeah.
So no matter what it is that you're sharing, no matter how deep it goes or how painful or how good, there's no judgment to you as to what you went through.
Yeah, absolutely.
But about assisting a facilitation of healing at whatever level.
Oh, good point, John. Zulu 1 is written out, so O-N-E.
So it's Zulu O-N-E.
Yeah, Zulone podcast@gmail.com.
great. That's good.
Yeah, John brought up a good point. So,
but it's most important that everybody understands that there is no judgment.
Yeah, there's no judgment. Yeah,
and that's totally confidential.
That's such a hard concept for people to understand. When and that's the thing. The thing that it most terrifies you about getting into the constellation work is like, are they going to judge me? Right? It's like when you come in, you're like, there's no judge. There's
well, that's why we say you have to take yourself out of the body and out of your mind.
Out of your mind, yeah.
And one of the things that we say that's really important when you're a facilitator or even when you're speaking and you're leading a group or whatever you're doing is, what they think of me is none of my business. What I think of me is all of my business.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
So if you can say that to yourself a few times, like if you're going to give a speech and you're worried, are they going to like me? They're not going to like me. Just be the facilitator of the information, of the modality, and don't attach to outcome.
Yeah.
Don't expect.
That's what I'm doing here is like, that was the hardest part for me because I go through and I'm talking about like, what are they going to think? And is it going to be the right thing? I'm like, just get out of your head and just do it because you have to just start.
Right.
If you start and get the train, you know, out of the station and going, everything will fall into place.
Right.
And I like, what is the branding going to be like? What is that? I'm not like, I just kind of wrap myself around the axle thinking, what is this going to, oh, and I'm like, I just need this important. And that's what Jan Jacob told Michelle, you know, she was kind of wrapping herself around this stuff. And it's like, your vision is worth it.
Right.
And that's what I told myself. I was like, my vision is worth it.
Right.
It's all the other stuff is loyalty loyalty to the system to not be successful and not be put your information out there.
Right.
And the vision is worth it.
Right. But what we want to really make people understand is that you're never alone.
Yeah.
And that you don't have to be in pain alone.
You don't have to be in pain alone.
That there's always somebody who can assist you to see a little deeper and to release some of that pain.
Yeah.
That we know pain. We know the post-traumatic stress and the things. Some people have seen some really atrocious things.
Yeah.
But if you find the way to healing, then you can find a way to connecting, and you're not alone.
You're not alone.
So then you can start to see the healing of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I never realized the community in South Florida there's a constellation. There's several constellations.
A week. Yeah.
Thursdays, Sundays. You can come in from all over the country. They're happening on a regular basis. If you're in crisis.
And you can do them on Zoom.
Yeah.
And you can do them over the phone.
Yeah.
And there's never a need to be alone.
There's never a need to be alone.
And it's not about...
Or to suffer in silence.
Right, to suffer. And it's not only monetary either. Yeah. There's always ways to participate so that you can work on your healing.
Yeah.
There's always a step. All you have to do is ask.
All you have to do is ask, yeah.
Ask yourself, ask your higher self, ask your consciousness, ask whoever, whatever you believe in, the higher power or God or whatever, show me the way.
Yeah.
And the way is shown, the way is open. It's just setting the intention, like Abraham says.
It's setting the intention.
Set the intention, and then the universe supports your intention. But you have to have that clear focus of what it is you want.
Yeah, I'm part of a couple groups for veteran support. And it's just so many people reaching out to say I'm struggling. There's kind of they've destigmatized the mental health situation with veterans, and they're starting to reach out. But I don't. This isn't a judgment against the resources that are out there, but they're just not. It's not something tactical, right? That you can get going relatively quickly, have some movement, have some support, and it be immediate,
Right, but that's where you and I came in, where we decided that we would be available.
Yeah.
So if there's anyone who's listening who wants to contact John, we said that we would work with veterans groups.
Yep.
So we're available to at least bring the first step.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is contact John, whether it's on Facebook or at the Zulu1@gmail.com.
Zulu1podcast@gmail.com. Yeah. And Zulu1, ZULUONE podcast@gmail.com.
Right. That we are available to assist.
Yeah.
With issues that people don't need to feel alone, and they don't have to suffer, and some of them are very deep.
Yeah.
So we also have the connections to other resources, so we can assist with at least getting some help that's sometimes outside the mainstream system, right?
Yeah,
that
Right? That's the biggest, you know, you tell people about consolation, they're like, oh, so you're a crazy person, you know?
Right. Yeah. But
like, oh, so you're insane.
To support us, the country of Brazil has brought this in as a national medical treatment in the hospitals and things. So in Europe, it's recognized as a medical modality.
Yeah.
And it's getting there in the United States. But yeah, it's trusting what you can't see.
It's trusting what you can't see.
Yeah.
It's really trusting what you can't see.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really trusting what you can't see. But if you start to look at, just do that exercise of looking at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And saying the second part, that you love yourself just the way you are. Even if you don't believe it, you're going to start that momentum.
Yeah.
Of accepting you and everything that
just the way you are. Yeah.
Yeah, because
It starts with a movement of acceptance.
Yeah.
Is there an exercise that somebody could do like that, that they could start out with, maybe to, you know, start a movement that they could say, or maybe a mental movement that they can maybe look at their parents and thank them? Or is there something that you could, an exercise that we could leave with everybody that they could do?
So other than like looking in the mirror at yourself, mm-hmm. you can take a picture. If you have a picture of your parents, mm-hmm. like you put... you set up like a little picture of your parents separate, one of your mom, one of your dad, and one of yourself. And if you're looking at it, then the mom is going to be on the left side that you're looking at. I'm sorry, the right side. Because you're always looking at, she's going to be behind you on the left.
Okay.
So she has to be on the right side
closest
when you're looking
at
it, right? And your dad's going to be on the left side. But if you turned around, they would be in
opposite,
the correct.
Yeah.
And a little picture of yourself. And if you don't, you could just set up like three candles. But don't burn candles when you're not home.
Yeah.
Very careful with candles. It's not something to leave unattended.
Yeah.
Or you can just put rocks or crystals. So to represent the mother, the father, and yourself. And so you're in front, so you make it like a triangle. And you, on Facebook, we can put up a short little...
guide.
Yeah, where you just say, Mom, Dad, thank you for the life that you gave me. I will walk in my place as the child.
That's powerful. Just doing that starts a movement, right?
Just doing that starts a movement because you're putting yourself in the place of the child.
Yeah.
And if you were standing in as the partner, you're moving yourself back.
Yeah. And that's even if your dad wasn't in the picture or your mom wasn't in the picture. Just that's even if you had no relationship with them whatsoever.
So if you have an adopted mother, then you put two candles for two moms and two dads. And you say, thank you for the life that you gave me, because nurturing you, no matter if they nurtured you in a good way or a bad way, they still give you life. You still had something.
They still give you something,
So you always acknowledge your biological parents and you always acknowledge the adopted parents.
Okay.
Okay. And if there were foster parents that were like parents that you were really connected to, in a good way or a bad way, they're there.
They were there,
But just acknowledging them and just, you know, I see you as the people that gave life to me.
Yeah.
and you just leave it there.
Yeah, the most basic thing is that we all have, you know, both parents, right? A mother right. and a father.
Well, you had to have both because you couldn't. And even if it was artificial insemination, the sperm came from something.
So, yeah, exactly.
Somewhere, some person.
Yeah.
So even if you don't know them,
yeah,
there's still a genetic bond.
Yeah, there's still a genetic bond. Yeah.
So yeah, there's still a father.
Yeah, even in people, it's like the sperm donor. It's like, well, no, you have to recognize.
Say the father.
The father. That
yeah,
is the father.
It's
not a sperm donor. That is the father.
Because you're not acknowledging the contribution that they made
denying,
to your life.
And you're denying half of who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, you're right. They're not a sperm donor.
They're not
they
a sperm donor.
They are the father.
They are the father. Yeah.
Because.
Good, bad, indifferent. Right.
Right, and you don't have to know your parents to energetically connect to them.
Yeah,
you don't have to love them in the beginning to connect to them.
Yeah,
because what you're doing is you're just connecting to yourself.
Yeah,
by standing in your place as the child and having them behind you.
Yeah,
you're standing in your place so that you can be available for your destiny.
Yeah,
and you don't have to repeat an ancestor's or be living in someone else's destiny.
Yeah.
And that's something we didn't touch on, but that's.
And you're
really
taking
important.
All of your life force. You're,
exactly.
You're fulfilling all of your life force when you're doing that.
You're
it's an act of self-love.
All of you.
Yeah, yes. you're embracing all of you, and that's an act of self-love. Is
exactly.
To take all of you and
exactly.
That's where your life force comes from.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you can add like in you know, thank you for the life you give me, and I embrace my life.
Yeah.
I am present
that's a
for
very
my life. Because even if you're not going to embrace your life, but if you're present for your life, then you can start the healing.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to be connected just to the trauma, because there are good things that happen in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's powerful. Yeah. Well, that is 2 hours, almost 2.5 hours. 2 hours and 15 minutes, yeah. That's what it is. Well, thank you, Sophie, so much for coming.
Well, thank you.
It was great having you.
Thank
really
you for having me and giving a chance to share this. Yeah. Healing is powerful work.
This is powerful work, yeah. So thank you very much for coming.
And thank you for having me.
All right.
And, you know, just tell everybody where they can contact us and contact you.
So Zulu1podcast@gmail.com. That's Zulu, Zulone podcast@gmail.com. Send your questions. Also, we have a Facebook group called Zulu1, One Team, One Fight. So you can contact us on Facebook.
And if you want to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with me through John. He can give you my contact information. We have groups all the time. We know of other people who have groups all the time.
You have a Facebook, right? It's the do you want to give out your Facebook? Your ancestor
healing?
Oh, yeah.
Healing? So I have that would help.
Right? Yeah, that would help, right?
So I have a website, ancestralconstellations.net,
okay.
Which has the contact information, a little bio about me, and also some of the services that we do. So it's ancestralconstellations, two L's with an S at the end, .net.
Yep.
But if you need to get in touch with me, you can always get in touch with me through John.
Yeah.
But there's different modalities that support constellations as well. But the most important thing for everybody, and that's what I would like to leave this with, is that healing is one step at a time.
Yeah.
So just take the first step.
Just take the first step. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.